Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, hello. Hi, guys. Welcome to the podcast. This is Nicole Sachs, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain. Welcome to it. Here we are. Today we have a fantastic conversation, such a beautiful and lovely real-time heal with Liz Milani from The Practice Co. If any of you guys follow her on Instagram at The Practice Co., she does this really beautiful spiritual community that includes everyone. She was raised in a pretty restrictive religious upbringing, which I do not judge, nor do I have any opinion about other than when I hear someone's story, I listen to it from their perspective. And from Lizzie's perspective, it was incredibly shaming and put a lot of pressure on her. And there were some lies and some deception going on in the background. And it led her to forge her own way with her own spirituality. And I love the content that The Practice Co. puts out. And this is not in any way an endorsement for them other than the fact that they're just, it's just incredible. She and her husband, Jesse, have just a beautiful platform. So do check it out. And today we got together. So Liz and I have sort of known each other for maybe about a year. I did an Instagram live real-time heal with her when she first came into the work. And most of it was around her resistance to doing the work, which of course is completely normal. We all have resistance to doing work. I mean, that's the human condition. You know, oftentimes I say, why are the self-help / weight loss / improvement, personal improvement, why are these industries like trillion-dollar industries? And it's because there's so many different ways to approach evolving ourselves, but we resist doing the work. And, you know, most things, most good programs will work if you work them. And I am very well acquainted with resistance, and I have a lot of empathy for your resistance should you be encountering it. And Lizzie had a lot of resistance at the beginning, but she has plowed through her resistance, done a lot of excellent work, and just felt a little stuck. And we thought we would jump on the podcast and do a real-time heal so she could kind of share her story with those who it might help and then get some guidance from me. And we really found a lot of incredible, beautiful moments where she could find some real guidance and connection. And she's reached out to me since and said that it's made a huge impact on her. So I'm thrilled for that, and I'm thrilled for whatever it can bring to you guys. So that's coming up today, and I'm not going to go on too long. I would like to just give you the few announcements of the upcoming events. So look at my resources tab on thecureforchronicpain.com and the retreats tab. We have an Omega mini evening with myself and Caroline Dewey. We're going to do an intro to my work and an intro to her somatic experiencing work so people can understand what they could get if they come to our in-person 5-day Omega workshop. So that mini Omega workshop, which is listed on my resources tab on my website, is May 11th from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, if you'd like to take advantage of that. Also, I have two mini retreats coming up, a self-compassion mini retreat and a fawning response. So the fight, flight, freeze, fawning trauma response. Those two mini retreats are also offered on my website. And I have a weekend long full immersion with my Omega instructors, Freedom from Chronic Pain Retreat, May 21st through the 23rd. If you are really looking to dive into this work and change your life, come to that weekend. It includes a free copy of my Cure for Chronic Pain online course and my 4 original meditations. Come with your retreat fee. So it really gives you everything. If you're new to this work, it's a huge gift you can give yourself. That's May 21st through the 23rd. And finally, if you want to learn with me in person, with all my guest instructors, Athena Allred, Caroline Dewey, Lisa Schlossberg, Erin Chavone, and Ruthie Lindsay, come to Omega. August 1st through the 6th. Go to eomega.org, or you can just click the link from my website on the Retreats tab or the Resources tab. I cannot say enough, even though I always freaking do, what Omega has done to me, for me, and with me. It's a magical place, and I can't even describe it. It's ineffable. You have to just be there to experience it. Please come join us. All right. That is the intro with all the things that you can take advantage of if you want to work with me directly. I no longer take private patients, but I am very, very intimately involved in my retreats, and you will see that if you come. All right, my sweets. Enjoy this real-time heal with the beautiful Liz Milani, such a gorgeous soul, and I hope you get something out of it. All right, until next time. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Real Time Heal. Today, I am here with the Practice Co's Liz Milani. Welcome, Liz.
Thanks for having me, Nicole.
Now, Liz and I don't know each other actually, but we kind of cyber know each other via Instagram, and I love her. I love you.
And I'm with you.
And I just fit, you know, we had been chatting about potentially doing a real-time heal. About a year back, we did an Instagram Live real-time heal, which was super fun. Mm-hmm. But I think this kind of situation can reach more people and also like lives on the internet a bit more. And yes. Also, Liz has come a long way from that time. So what I'm really interested, Liz, is for you to share your story however you'd like to share it, and we'll kind of go through it. And then wherever you're struggling, we'll find some answers for you.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me. I'm a little nervous. I don't quite know where to begin, because I'm like the classic TMS personality since learning about it from you. I have feelings all over the place, and then I have feelings about my feelings being all over the place.
Yes.
You know? But I suppose just a really quick rundown would be, now that I know what TMS is since finding you and your work, I think I found you about 18 months ago. I think I've had TMS my whole life with, you know, digestive issues, and I've had carpal tunnel, and I've had back issues and headaches and all kinds of things. Just not anything enough to put me in hospital or, you know, really, really sick or anything like that, but just enough for me to go, oh, there's something holding me back.
Right.
So anyway, I grew up a pastor's kid, and then I became a pastor, and my husband became a pastor, and we worked for my father. And then in my late 20s, working for my dad's church, we found out my dad was living a double life. And overnight, we lost, you know, my family imploded. So my parents both lost their jobs as pastors of a church. A really messy, horrible divorce ensued. Jesse and I were kind of stuck in the middle. I don't have a relationship with my dad at the moment. The whole thing was quite traumatic on every level of my life. So at home, at work, I had a newborn at the time. I had a four-month-old when all this happened. And then, so my family was imploding in all kinds of ways. And then work, we got new celebrity pastors in at work. And, you know, I know this is sounding very churchy. So for those who don't, you know, might not be in that church space to understand how that works, you know, we got these new celebrity famous pastors in. They were known all over the world. They took over the church. And we thought, oh, this is awesome. Things are going to be great. But for the next 3 years, things just got steadily worse. And by the time we quit, I think what we experienced in those 3 years, on top of the trauma of my family imploding, was just next level. So then we quit our jobs as pastors and started again in our mid-30s with two kids and no money and no plan. But we managed to kind of like pull ourselves together. And about 18 months, 2 years in, I looked at Jesse, my husband, and I said, dude, I think we're going to be okay. I think we're going to be fine. And literally the next week, my body just started breaking down.
Wow.
And the first thing that happened was this pain in my ears. And I went to every ENT that would have me. I spent so much money, and they all just said they couldn't find anything, maybe just a little bit of redness. So they all just filled me full of antibiotics to try and get rid of the pain that I was feeling. And so I just spent the next sort of 2 to 3 years in a circle of going to different doctors and then all kinds of, you know, bits and pieces, symptoms coming up in my body. And by the end of it, or the height of it, I was sleeping maybe 1 to 2 hours a night. I had chronic digestion issues. I couldn't do anything. I spent a lot of time in bed. You know, it was a really terrible time. I had to put work on hold.
It started in your ears, and when it migrated to your stomach, did it stay in your ears, or was it literally, like, tell me more about what was going on in your body?
No, it stayed in my ears. How do I describe it? I had chronic brain fog. I wasn't digesting any food, so I dropped like 10 kilos in the space of a month. At the height of it, I wasn't sleeping. My joints were aching.
So you must have thought you were dying.
I thought something was seriously wrong. And I kept going to doctors, and all my tests would come back clear.
Oh God. It's like a blessing and a curse at the same time, because you don't want to be dying, but you also don't want no one to understand what's going on with you.
What's going on in my body? It was crazy. And I found, you know, through natural medicines and all different alternatives, I went on these crazy diets and started taking a shit ton of supplements, and I got myself back into some sense of physical normalcy. And then I fell surprise pregnant, which was not the plan. And I freaked out thinking, I don't have, you know, just on the back of a couple of years of all of that, like, I can't do this. I don't have the strength to do this. You know, I just gotten my work back up and running. Anyway, long story short, had the baby. I proved myself wrong. Everything was fine. I was strong enough. The birth was great. He was wonderful. 3 months in to having this beautiful child, who's Oliver, and I know that you have an Oliver.
Yes.
I looked at Jesse and said again, and I should have known. I didn't know about this work back then. I looked at Jesse again. They said, dude, I've freaking done it and I'm okay. The next week, the ear pain came back.
Oh, and, honey.
But it was exponential, like worse than it was the first time. And I went to an ENT. I was desperate, and because my ears weren't just hurting, they were flicking. It was like there was something banging on my eardrum. And I went to the ENT completely desperate, wired out of my brain. And he looked at me after checking me out and he said, are you experiencing a lot of stress in your life right now? And this is the week before I said to Jesse, we're doing it. Everything's great. I'm so happy. Right. And I looked at him and I nearly told him to F all the way off to hell, because I'm like, my life is great. There is something wrong with my ears. Don't speak to me about my anxiety. And he's like, you need to go home and calm down. And so I went home and I calmed down, and the flicking in my ears turned out to be a muscle twitching on my eardrum, and that never came back. But I calmed down and I got myself back to a sense of normalcy. And again, 6 months later, in that time I was talking to a girlfriend and about this ear stuff, and she said that her husband had tinnitus, and she was telling me about it. And I remember thinking, at least I don't have that. That would be the worst.
Man.
And not knowing about your work or anything or how it all worked. And I'm like, oh God, thank God I don't have that. And, you know, 6 months later, I looked at Jesse and I said, I think I'm cool. Let's go for it. Let's, you know, level up at work. Let's get back into it. And a week later, actually, and I hesitate to tell this story a little bit because I don't want to put Jesse in a bad light, because he's a great guy, but we were having this pretty clanger of an argument. And
everyone fights. No judgment here.
And this was a doozy. This was one of those ones. And unfortunately, my 7-year-old daughter she kind of came into the argument. And this is what I want to talk to you about today, basically, some of what I want to talk to you about today. because in this argument I was having with my husband, I had this incredible out-of-body experience where I felt like I was my daughter and I felt like I was a child again, and I felt like I was the glue in everything. I felt like I had to abandon myself to fix her, abandon myself to fix Jesse and what was going on in the fight. And then I felt like the little girl that I was, who felt like she just had to lay down and die for everybody else's happiness. And this all happened like in a 30-second window.
Wow.
And I remember going to bed that night going, okay, fine, I have to just, you know. And like, it wasn't, this is a pattern that I developed in my life, growing up in my family and even being part of a religious institution that I was a part of, that I'm no longer a part of. But you're taught to sacrifice yourself. You're actually taught to abandon yourself, to not trust your body, to not, you know, follow your heart or your intuition, and that your job is to help and be there and solve things for other people. So I remember going to bed that night thinking, I have to put things I want on hold so that I can fill all these other gaps. And the next morning I woke up with tinnitus.
I mean, I know that this is like somewhat humorous in the retelling, just because of like how predictable it is and how crazy it is and how ironic it is.
Now it is.
but I have to say, it's also a beautiful example of the way our nervous system is desperate to protect us. Yes. And love us. And that's why I always use these opportunities when people are talking like this to tell everyone out there, your body is not against you. What was happening in Lizzie's body was literally a protective function where she was deciding, she made a decision, I will forsake myself. I must. Yes. I know how to do this and I will. And the nervous system said, no, that will kill you. We're going to give you something else to worry about. And that's the way this works. So I just needed to just jump in, but go on.
No, that's so true. And I know that now looking back, and I do find it funny. Like, I do find myself laughing at the irony of it. And that's how I know it's TMS, because yes. I can pinpoint every time I'm tempted to not believe and go see doctors and go on, you know, do all of that. I'm like, no, you've got to remember how this happened. This is TMS. This is your body doing exactly what you just said, Nicole. So anyway, that's how I found you too, because I got this tinnitus and I completely freaked out because I meditate. Silence is very important to me. And all of a sudden my silence was robbed.
Of course.
It was blindsiding and terrifying, to be honest. And I went to doctors again. I Googled everything, and like, I have a strict no Google rule now these days. Yeah. But it is how I found you, because every corner I went to on the internet and in real life, they just said, oh, you just have to put up with it. Just forget about it. There's nothing you can do. And I found you. I found you through Dr. There was a video on YouTube, somebody who had done Dr. Sano's work and had tinnitus, amongst other things, and you resolved it. And then Ruthie Lindsay wrote about you at the same time. And I'm like, I've got to check out this Nicole lady. And I binged your podcast in a weekend. And this was a year and a half
ago. That's dedication. So
I
had less, yeah.
You had less then. But I was like just at a point thinking, you know, and I know it just sounds stupid over just ringing in your ears, but, you know, silence was everything and I'd no longer had silence. And, you know, my nervous system was doing the job because I wasn't focusing on anything other than getting rid of this ringing in my ear. And then I found you and I worked through a whole lot of stuff and, you know, I've regained my confidence and I barely give a shit about the tinnitus anymore. It's still there. It is going away very slowly. But I know that it still has things to teach me, and I think it's tied up with not my relationship with my daughter per se, but, you know, how I saw myself in my daughter in that moment. And that's what I'm having trouble with in the work at the moment. I mean, we've spoken in the past about how do the work is probably your core value or the three things that you tell people to do that I have the most trouble with showing up in my journaling.
Liz has a bit of resistance.
I have a little bit of resistance, but every time I lock into it, God, I've messaged you a few times, like, this journal speak was crazy and was amazing and I've made all this progress. But when it comes to doing inner child work, and figuring out what I really feel about things that happened in my past. I'm really good at figuring out how I feel about things that are happening now. But, you know, I'm such an empathetic person. I feel everything, and I feel everything that everybody else feels. Sometimes I find it really difficult to figure out what I actually feel. I'm starting to get a bit emotional, but when I'm trying to do these journal speaks to connect with my inner child, I just feel like I'm in the middle of a jungle with no compass, no map, and I can't freaking find my way out. I can't find my way to that little girl. And my job is I'm a writer. And so often when I turn up to my journal speak, half of my issue is to put aside writing what I know. Like even talking, coming to this conversation with you this morning, I made sure I had a full morning before, you know, coming to hang out with you, because whenever I speak to anybody, God, I'm going to sound like such an idiot. I speak to anybody, I have a list in running in my head. These are the things that they're going to want to hear. So, you know, you've got to impress, you've got to be good. You want to make sure you're making everybody comfortable. And so to kind of not have all of that running in my head, even coming to speaking to you this morning, I made sure I was busy. I didn't have time to go, what should I say to Nicole? And just let things sort of unfold as they do. But that's how I feel when I go to write about my inner child. It's almost like there's a script and I have to abandon the script, but then I just can't make that connection. I don't even know if I'm making any sense.
No, you're making beautiful sense. So let me go back and do a little bit of review.
Okay.
So you have this incredibly traumatic fight with your husband, and your daughter kind of walks into it, and however that goes, and you have the sort of out-of-body experience where you see yourself as a child. She almost brought up for you a memory, but not really a specific memory, more of a consciousness of this little girl inside that has been left behind. So obviously it's very poignant for you to try to actually go back and find her. And now you're feeling really sort of overwhelmed with the concept of doing so. Okay. So why don't we, if you're willing, do a little bit of inner child work together right now. Are you willing?
Sure. I am willing.
Okay. So have you heard me say, when I talk about inner child work, that inner child work is less about talking to our inner child and more about listening?
Yes, I have.
Okay. So what I'd like to do with you is I would like you to get take a moment, and it's okay for you to just, you know, I know it's a podcast, but you can take a moment, and I want you to pick a child, pick your age, pick what you looked like. And just find her in your mind. It can be either you in your imagination remembering how you looked, or it could be a photograph that you can, you know, kind of that you've seen of yourself. And why don't you describe her to me?
Okay. sorry about that. There's a photo that I'm thinking of, that I'm picturing.
Okay.
And I'm about 5 or 6. And I have this huge smile on my face. I've draped myself over the kitchen table in a very dramatic fashion. Because I used to put on plays and sing and dance and just try to make everybody have a lovely time, if that makes sense. I really enjoyed, you know, performing and having fun that way.
So when you think of this little Lizzie at 5 or 6, do you see her as happy and content, or do you feel that inside she's struggling?
No, I see her as really happy.
Does this feel like a time before something went wrong?
Yes. Cause I feel like, shivers. I'm going to cry. This photo is the photo I often picture when I try to do the inner child work, because I can't lock in on an age after that time, if that makes sense. Whenever I try to connect with myself or that inner child version of me at any other age, it's like it's playing chasey with me and I can't
Yeah. Okay. So I see what's happening. I'm going to help you. Okay. So what's happening is when you try, this is why you're in the woods without a compass, because when you try to do your inner child work, you keep getting drawn back to this lovely, beautiful memory. It's the same way we all are drawn into comfort versus discomfort. We want to just be relieved. We just want to be in the space where we felt free and where these problems don't exist. But unfortunately, the kids that are suffering and are festering back there because we don't know how to find them are later on kids. And so I find it really sweet and lovely that this is the child that you went to, but this, and we honor her. And listen, the thing with inner child work is the whole point is to go back and retrieve these kids and bring them with us. And I actually know a little bit about you just from your energy that she, that 5-year-old draped over the table, she's already with you. She's with you all the time because you are a joyful person and you certainly bring a beautiful energy in your writing. So I'm not concerned about her not coming with us. But what I am going to do is I'm going to ask you to now that you're struggling with a picture in your mind, that's fine. I want you to pick I want you to describe to me an incident where you see yourself, and it doesn't have to be like some like violent fight or something. Like I'll do it for me. When I think about my middle school years, if you were to ask me, if you were asking me this question, the answer I would say is I can picture myself in 8th grade living in our second house in Florida, and I had no friends. It was just a terrible move. We had moved 3 or 4 times. We ended up in Florida. I didn't know anyone. And I can picture the way it felt to lay in my bed on this particular day. So I want you to just pick an age like that and just tell me a story of what it felt like. It doesn't matter what you tell me, to go to church, to go to school, to sit down and eat dinner with your parents. Help me find somebody who's suffering.
The memory that comes most readily to mind is I was in grade 4 here in Australia. Okay. So I would have been my daughter's age. She's in grade 4. She's 9. And we were playing celebrity head in school, and growing up the type of Christian that we were, I was never allowed to read non-Christian authors, listen to non-Christian music, watch the news, anything like that. I was much in a bubble. So playing celebrity head, I had no idea who anybody was. And so, you know, we're going through it and I just had to keep, when it would come to be my turn to try and figure out who was on my head, I think I got to the question, am I a pop star? And they said yes. And I knew I wouldn't be able to guess the answer. And so I just passed through the whole game. And, you know, kids were laughing at me and I felt alone and very different. But at the same time, and I don't want to admit this, but I felt a sense of righteousness. Mm-hmm. That I'm ashamed of now, because I was brought up believing that being different was, and not different in a good way, like not celebrating one's difference, but that being mocked and being, you know, persecuted, not that I was being persecuted now that I know what that means, but when you're 9 and you're getting teased in class, I thought that I was being a good Christian soldier. So I had this dichotomy of feelings going on.
Absolutely. No, you're not. Listen, you're so not a weirdo. The one thing I'll tell you, is one of the reasons that I think I'm drawn to the work that I do and I'm good at it is because there is not one person in the world, even the ugliest on the outside looking person in terms of their behavior, where I can't at least completely understand why they are the way they are because of the way they were raised. We only have what we've been given to work with. And so I'm sure you used your projection of superiority in order to soothe yourself. You know, so what that I don't know all those celebrities? I know what I'm a good Christian and I can see where these people don't understand what I understand. That's totally understandable. So I guess my next question is, tell me how old you were when you started to understand that maybe you didn't believe that, or maybe that wasn't the whole story.
It's so complicated for me
just
to
an
answer
inkling
that question.
When it
I was
started
17.
To become 17, okay.
And I, you know, did what all normal 17-year-olds do. I was partying and rebelling, and I would stay out. I'd sneak into pubs and clubs, and I would stay out drinking, and then I'd come to church the next morning half drunk and lead the praise and worship team. But I just had this dichotomy of, I don't know if this is worth it. But then I did sling back and, you know, guilted myself enough that I went to Bible college and became a pastor even after all of that.
So my question is, and this, I'm just doing some exploration here.
Yeah, no,
when
it's good.
When you bring yourself back, picturing your own daughter and that whole scenario, what part of your childhood felt achy to you? Because it seems like from what you're telling me, and I don't know if this is, you know, maybe trying to put a rose-colored glasses on it. It seems like from what you're telling me, you seemed content with it until you weren't. So when you look at your daughter and you feel that pang, where do you think that's coming from?
This is the trouble that I'm having. I don't know. I know now, knowing what I know now and doing the work that I've done and shedding some of those beliefs that I had, I was definitely corralled into the life that I had, if that makes any sense. So as a child, I didn't have any choice but to believe in God, and it was very celebrated. So it would be said in my home, which is great. It was a great family growing up. There was no abuse or anything like that. But to belong and to be celebrated, I needed to be a really good Christian on board girl. And every time I, you know, my dad would, when I'd raise my hands in church, I'd get like, oh, I loved seeing you do that. And then if I remembered Bible verses, I'd be celebrated. And I think what I did as a child and what I see my own daughter doing today is, maybe not doing the things that are true to her, but doing the things that she thinks will make us happy. And I've seen her do it. I've seen her, you know, lie. It's the biggest issue that we have. My daughter's incredible. She's very creative, but I, you know, she lies a lot. And I think the lying is to please us. And I know that I, you know, when I was a kid, I may not have directly known that I was lying, but I was actively looking and seeking for acceptance and praise because it made me feel really good.
Okay. I got it. So I want you to tell me now, this is where I needed to find the kid I want to find.
Yeah.
So you are in fourth grade and you know intuitively that you are more loved, more accepted, more welcomed by your tribe if you are a certain way.
Yes.
And I would like you to just try, and it's not always easy to just come up with it on the first try, to speak to me from her. So I want to say to her, what is it like to be you? What does it feel like to be you? And like I said, this is just work that continues to evolve and evolve as we try to do it. But this is where we start. This is how we feel less overwhelmed. So just try it for, tell me something.
Well, the first word that came to my mind, even while you were asking the question, was I feel responsible. And I think my whole life I have felt an incredible amount of responsibility for things that don't even matter now, but you know,
But you're nine. You're nine. So tell me, what do you feel responsible for?
Oh, it's going to sound so dumb.
It's okay.
Like, I felt responsible for, in my bubble that I grew up in, which is not a reflection of where I am now, but I felt responsible for being the hands and feet of Jesus. I felt like I was it, you know. I felt the weight of changing the world in a very, as a little girl and as I could understand it, I felt this incredible weight to, I don't want to say the word revival because I hate that freaking word, but I felt that weight of bringing the love of God to people, or they're all going to go to hell and burn and die. And it's up to me. I don't believe that anymore, by the way, people. But
well, Liz has been on a long journey.
That way, I've been on a long journey. But as a little girl,
the thing is, try to really take any of the shame out of it while we're talking right now, because there's no reason. It's okay. There's no reason to apologize. Nobody is judging you. We're all on our own journey, and nobody's judging you. And I think the truth of the matter is, if we're going to really talk about what you need to do for yourself and inner child work, it has nothing to do with the content that you felt responsible for. Like, I could be having the exact same conversation and have with a child who had no religion in her life but had a severely alcoholic parent, and she could have told me, it's my responsibility to keep my siblings alive and to make sure my mom doesn't choke on her own vomit, and it's my responsibility and I'm nine. And and believe it or not, though, that's the same side effect that you are feeling. It's this weight, this heaviness as a child that we impose upon ourselves, that, you know, we could get a sense of it from our parents and our society, but the internal damage is what we have imposed upon ourselves. Because I promise you, there were little girl things in your mind that occurred to you, maybe just fleeting, that you would also like to do. And like, you know, and then you shoved them away because you had this heavy responsibility to be, what did you say, the hands and feet of Jesus?
The hands and feet of Jesus,
And that's a huge self-imposed responsibility for such a little person. So the way you began to forsake yourself, to discard your needs, came from something incredibly confusing. It came from a love of this concept of Jesus and religion that was being taught to you from all sides. And not only that, you were not permitted to learn anything else to have a different perspective.
Exactly. Yeah.
So can we sit with this little girl and say to her, wow, I see you. And I see how much pressure that was for you. And I see how confusing that must have felt to you. And it's really just, that's the inner child work, sitting with her and putting your arm around her, if she'll let you. Sometimes they want it, sometimes they don't. And letting her tell you, and this is just a tidbit, but when you go back to your journal speak, what I'd like you to do is get her back in your head, this one we're talking to right now, and say, I'm putting 20 minutes on the clock, sweet little Lizzie. I would like you to tell me what it feels like to be you. Anything it is, I'm fascinated. I don't want to make it better. I don't want to tell you how it's going to turn out. I just want to listen, because the only thing that matters to me is to understand you. I just want to hear you. Can you imagine if anyone ever said that to you as a kid?
Oh my God. I know. Yes.
It's really powerful. And once you start doing that little by slowly, these kids are going to start knocking at your door, you know, 15-year-old, 17-year-old. And then, of course, you have to look at that. How old were you when you found out your father had a double life?
The first time? Okay, this is complex as well. But when I was 12, he was and I was in grade 7, I was in high school. He lost his job as a pastor, and no one told me why, but I was old enough to understand that he'd done something incredibly wrong. And he was not the senior pastor of this church, but like on staff. But then he kind of got himself together, and 2 years later he got his pastorship back. But I always knew he'd done something incredibly wrong and something wasn't right. And I kind of carried that. And then, you know, in that time too, I had adults come to me and try and ask me what he'd done, and I didn't know. You know, and I kind of defended him because I was the daughter and I'm the eldest, and of course I'm going to defend him. But I had a question in my own heart, and I didn't want to unlock that door. But then when we found out the second time, I was 28 and had a 4-month-old baby. When we found out.
And also had already dedicated your life in many ways to what he was doing.
I had given up a spot at a university to go to Bible college because he express, you know, he was like, you know, this is for you. You should be a pastor and we should keep it all in the family. And I think he was only doing what he thought was best, but I had given my whole life for this thing. And then when we found out it was him, what had happened, he blamed everything on me. Which was a very interesting conversation. But yes,
so
it was all my fault.
I want to ask you a question about 12-year-old Lizzie.
Yeah.
So when you first found out that your father was fired and you got this sense that, of course, nobody was telling you, but something really had happened, would you say that was a shifting moment in your life in terms of your understanding of, like, maybe things are not the way I see them?
Yes. And I remember, because I have done it many times since, made a choice. I flicked a switch in my brain and I just went, I'm not going down that path. I'm going to continue going down this path. And that's what got me, you know, staying in a toxic kind of environment for as many years as I was in it, because I was just like, no, I've got to be the good Christian soldier and I've got to persevere. And so I switched off the doubts and the questions and the.
Okay. The so wondering. I'm starting to build in my mind this sort of structure of your childhood, which mm-hmm. is 5-year-old Lizzie, joyful, you know, performing, full of the love of God, having no conflict, right?
Yes.
Yes.
True. Yes.
And then we have, you know, 7 to 9-year-old Lizzie, who is seeing that there's an outside world, being mocked by it for very unfortunate reasons that you had no control over. And then finding her comfort in superiority, which is what often kids do. Well, it's okay if they hate me. I know best. You know, I'm doing God's work.
It's what happens.
This is all incredibly normal. And I could put it across lots of different situations of the way kids try to make themselves okay to keep their self-esteem intact. And then at the same time, we have 12-year-old Lizzie, who now has a little bit of the joy and the pressure and the love for her religion and her family, but now a question of, is it all as I think it is? And you make a pivotal choice, which I probably think was the beginning of the depth of your TMS, which is, I see one way and I'm shutting the door to that way and I'm doing this. And that is the reason that every single person who has TMS has it, which is, by the way, everyone in the world. Because when we when we have to deny our authentic selves, that is when we have to store that trauma in the body. I just talked about it today on Instagram. And
saw that post this morning.
Yeah. Yes. This won't air on the day that I posted it, but literally, ironically, that is what I posted about, because denial of our authentic selves, and our authentic selves are multifaceted. You know, they're conflictual. Yes, you loved your father and you loved your religious upbringing and you loved Jesus and you loved all these things because you did. And it's okay. You did and you should have. I mean, it was the way you were being raised. And at the same time, there was a darkness and you couldn't understand it, but you said, not go in there. Yeah. And that's when we shut down a part of ourselves. It has to go somewhere. And I'm just curious, is that when you were having stomach problems as a kid? Do you remember if it coincided with that time in your life?
It wasn't stomach problems, but it was knee problems. It's when I played piano and played a lot of sport, and my knees and my hands started to ache.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me, because your body, your heart, your mind body system, your heart cannot handle the amount of emotional repression, and this is by design. It just can't. I mean, it becomes overwhelming, and so that is when it channels into the body. So you know, I want to be honest with you, Liz. Yes. I know that you're concerned that the inner child work is like the thing that you're stuck on. I'm not so sure.
I knew you were going to say that.
Did you?
Yes. I'm like, I bet I go in thinking it's this thing, and Nicole's going to go, I think it's something else, but I'm open to it.
Yeah.
Not all right, but well, I am open.
let's keep looking. And it's not that the inner child work isn't essential. It is freaking essential. I still do it all the time in order to be a good parent and not parent my kids through my bullshit. So I think the inner child work is essential, but I don't know. So tell me, give me a snapshot of what you're struggling with now. So you say the tinnitus is just kind of not really a concern. It's sometimes there. You notice it. What would you say is your biggest struggle right now?
Like in my emotional world or my physical world?
Any of it. Like what would cause you to want to talk to me?
I really do want the tinnitus gone, but I try to be, you know, because I know I've got to not care. So I'm trying not to, I don't care about it, but every now and then I care about it. The biggest thing for me is I know in my work, I've got some great opportunities coming up, but it means that I have to say some things that I've been shit scared to say and do. And I think I messaged you a few weeks ago and I was like, because I just listened to an episode on your podcast and I was journaling in that little moment as well. And I was feeling awesome. And I was like, yeah, just feeling very powerful, stepping out and doing things that I'd been afraid of doing and feeling like I was gaining my power back. But every now and then that fear of speaking the things that I know that I need to speak in the way that I need to speak them, you know, I get a little frightened.
Well, also let's go back to your history. Mm. Almost in a hilarious fashion. Only a week after each time you ever said, I'm in my power, was when your body broke down.
Yes. Yeah.
So, of course, you are feeling incredible trepidation about taking whatever you're taking to the next level. So so I just had to throw that out there because
– no, it's perfect.
What I think really is important for every aspect of what you're asking about and probably everyone out there is – our nervous system simply seeks the input from us that we are safe. Mm-hmm. And so whenever we always have to start with the end in mind, that we seek to give the message to the nervous system that we are safe. We don't need protection because all of these symptoms and all of these pains and syndromes and conditions and diagnoses are fired from the mind-body system, meaning firing from the brain, from the nervous system into our different muscle groups and nerve endings and everything like that because we are deemed as unsafe. It is a fight, flight, freeze, fawn reaction.
Yes.
And so I think it's really important for you to be super conscious that the only reason everything hit the fan right after you claimed your power was because you were not living authentically at the time.
Yeah. Yep.
Because your body was going to put up a huge stop sign and say, no, 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 no. We can't believe that everything is okay. It's not okay in here. We have so much to undo and unravel. And you've done so much of that work. Yeah. So I want you to understand you are safe now to come completely into your power, whatever that would be. And you have to start holding your nervous system like a sweet baby and rocking it and saying, we are okay now. I know what used to happen. I know what happened before, but that's not what we're doing here anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's very, very good. And I feel like I've been okay at saying that to the things that, you know, because it's interesting, even since speaking to you a couple of weeks ago, like, you know, I've had a little flare of this and a little flare of that. And I feel like I'm cool at going, just calm down, everyone, we're safe. But it's the stuff that hasn't happened or the things that I may be anticipating that I'm afraid of most, if that makes any sense.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, I certainly no pressure. Do you want to talk about it?
Sure.
All right. What are you scared to say?
Oh, shit.
You don't have to. You don't have to. But I mean, like, why not? Let's talk about it. I mean, I have no idea what you're talking about. So I don't want to pressure you. But like, what are you holding on to? Let's say it. Say it.
Okay. Here it is. I know exactly what it is. I'm a nice person, but I'm not a nice person. Does that make any sense? I'm so nice all the time. And I have things in me that aren't nice. They're kind and they're just, but they're not nice. And I am so good at being a nice person and I want everybody to freaking like me. So I've got to, I know it's my work to, and I've even been talking about this with Jesse and with our kids, I'm like, kindness over niceness, because niceness like can be destructive. I know that I've got to do that in my work.
Okay. So what you're saying, what I'm hearing is that you need to get more raw and real, yeah. And you're scared yeah. It is going to threaten the nice girl that needed to be nice in order to survive.
Yes. Yeah. And the last time we were clear about, and I'm saying we because Jesse and I, we quit our roles as pastors sort of together and we were honest, was not a good time. And it's not that we haven't been honest. I never write anything that I don't believe. When I show up on my Instagram page, I show up as me. But there are things that I probably withhold, to be honest, because when I'm withholding, I just fall back into niceness. So that.
Okay. This is very important for you, Lizzie. Lizzie.
Yes. I'm here.
You're no longer allowed to be a nice girl.
Yeah.
It's done. It's done for you, honey. And I want you to have tremendous compassion for all those little girls that you're going to go back and talk to. I want you to ask everyone that you can find, why do you need to be nice? Why do you need to be nice? Tell me, sweetheart, why do you need to be nice? What happened at church? What happened at home? What happened with daddy? What happened at school? What happened? Tell me why you need to be nice. Tell me why it's life or death. Tell me, is it because if you're not nice, people are going to burn in hell because they don't know Jesus? Tell me everything, sweetheart. Yeah. I want to know, because this is the thing. Niceness will kill you.
Yeah.
Niceness will kill you, because you know what? Niceness is a big fat fucking lie.
It is. Yeah.
It is. And, mm-hmm. and you know, and just like you said, kindness is everything, but niceness is fake. Because niceness is, I'm going to placate you with whatever niceness that I need to give you in order for you to essentially believe in this fake me.
Yeah.
And there's no room for that with a person who's trying to get rid of their TMS, because your nervous system knows your innermost thoughts.
Yes.
and there's so much fear behind niceness.
Yeah, there is. It's all fear-fueled.
Yes.
I can see it in my brain. But like shedding it is like the thing.
So this, okay. So similar to everything that we try to let go of, we can't just let go of it because we decide. So, you know, you were raised in a certain way. And I think honestly at minute 46, we're getting to the gold nugget of this conversation.
I think so.
you were raised, that's how it always happens. You were raised with niceness. Mm-hmm. Being life or death. And because you were little and you didn't have the capacity or the perspective to know that you weren't actually personally responsible for whether or not someone burned in hell, you didn't know that. You truly didn't know that. You thought you were responsible. You actually did.
Yeah.
And that's capital R real. Mm-hmm. And you know, your perspective, your perception is your reality. And your perception was, I am responsible for these people. Many people, and I need to grow up to be, you know, what my father says in the eyes of God. And so that is a no joke responsibility. And now here you are, a grown up, having lived through all you've lived through. And for those of you who don't know Lizzie's work, she is not a godless person. This is not a person who left the church and left it behind. She has a beautiful message of spirituality, which often mentions God. And it is so inspiring, and it's so beautiful, and it's so holistic, and it invites everyone to be invited and to be welcome in it. And so, you know, Lizzie's not a person who denounced the church and has walked away. And if you had, that's not what I'm saying. It wouldn't be bad. No. What she denounced is a certain type of inauthentic religion.
Yes.
That wasn't right. Am I saying that right?
Absolutely. 100%.
It's important to me, because I just don't want people having the wrong impression. But what I want to say to you is that level of niceness was niceness born of fear.
It was.
The only way to let that go is to go back to those girls and let them speak. So then when they're done, you can say, I heard you, sweetie. You see us now, right? Because they're all just there with you. And then they will help you let it go, because there is nothing to be afraid of anymore.
Oh, man. It's very good and very true. Yeah, I can, like, right now just sitting here, there's even things coming to mind, like even when I was 28 and in my early 30s going through all that religious spiritual trauma, I kept myself safe by being super duper agreeable and nice. And that's what I used. That was my mechanism. And at the time, I thought I was choosing the high road, or being the, you know, I don't know.
Just like fourth grade.
Right?
They're going to tease you, but you're just going to choose the high road because you know you're a good Christian. Yeah. See, so all this work, all this work we did on this call today, I want you to know, shows me that you have no problem doing inner child work at all.
Wow. Oh, geez. Okay.
You're actually really good at it. You know, you can go right to the heart of what the issue, the responsibility, the niceness, the conflict. I mean, you get it.
Oh, that's so good to hear. I'm going to rewind this part every day. You are good at this work.
you are great at this work.
Okay.
You're great at this work. The only thing you need to do now is know that anything we want to drop today doesn't get properly dropped until we go back to the source, to where it was life or death, and get that kid an ear, give her an ear, give her a place to put her voice. You know, I tell this story sometimes, but I'll repeat it because why not?
Why not?
Where my son Oliver was having some issues, some socially, like it wasn't even, it was like, it lasted like a day, but it was a time in his life where he was a little unsure of his friends. And I took it like such a personal devastation. And I was talking to my therapist about it, and he said, "Well, how old is he?" And at the time, I think he was 14. And I said, "He's 14. He said, "Well, what was going on for you at 14? And I was like, "Oh, I don't want to talk about it." Because it was the worst, year of my life.
Wow.
And he said, "The reason that you are carrying this amount of angst over what's going on for your child, when he's handling it fine," he said, "is because you are inhabiting it. Because back when you were 14, it was life or death." And I just went back to her and I sat with her. And you know what, Lizzie? When I looked at her, I judged her. I judged her because she judged herself. You know, like she thought she was fat. She thought she was awkward. She thought nobody liked her. And so I had to go back and I had to sit with her kindly. And that was hard. But through my persistent doing that and my showing up with love and my saying, "I see you, sweet thing. What was it like? What was it like that time, that night? What was it like waiting for the bus? What?" And I let her speak. I would just put on my journal speak timer and I would just write what she was saying. And I was filled with so much tremendous compassion for her. And then literally I would look at Oliver and I'd be like, "Eh, he's fine."
I am literally sitting here crying. Oh my God. Because that story was so good, Nicole, because my daughter, who's 9, she's beautiful, but we've had such a hard time together. Oh shit. The last few months. And you just explained exactly what happened. And I knew, because I think I've been looking at her and I've been so worried and I'm overthinking everything and I'm overparenting everything. And so she's feeling muzzled and I'm feeling frustrated. And I know I've had this little voice going, "It's not about her. This is about you."
Yes.
And so, that story just set me free in a whole lot of ways. Thank you.
I'm so glad, because, you know, there's nothing I enjoy more than using my awakenings to help people just, you know, put my hand down and pull you up a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Because, Lizzie, it was honestly remarkable. I had been angsting. My stomach was turning. I couldn't sleep over what was happening with this kid. And then as soon as I got to my kid and we had a nice conversation, I turned to him energetically, you know, my son. And I thought, look at him. First of all, he's doing it. He's doing it. He's going through his hard, awkward years and he's doing it. And second of all, look at him. He needs these lessons. I can't ride the roller coaster for him. He's a whole human being that he's going to have to live. He needs to develop his resiliency. And because I did that inner child work and I was able to step back,
Yeah.
He got the skills he needs, and he's in high school now, and he's amazing. And mm-hmm. and I think that this is what, this is the gift we give our children by working on ourselves.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, and I am here for it.
I know you are. And I have such respect for that, because being here for it is all you need. That's all you need.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
All right, my love. Well, this was so lovely. It was so great to spend time with you today.
Oh, always. Always, always. Thank you so much for making time for me.
Absolutely. All right, everybody. I'm sure, I hope you got something out of what we talked about today. And if you are enjoying the podcast, if you could jump over to iTunes and rate and review it, it really helps. I really appreciate it. And until next time, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs, and I'll see you then. Bye-bye.